Hello, and welcome to another episode of Such Stuff, the podcast from Shakespeare's Globe. This week, we're talking about the elephant in the Shakespearean room. There's an aura around Shakespeare and a whole host of preconceptions. That it is inaccessible, that it's too hard, that it's irrelevant, or that it's too elitist. There is often an unspoken idea about ownership when it comes to Shakespeare. So this week on the podcast, we'll be asking, who is Shakespeare for? And how do we go about breaking down some of the aura of inaccessibility around Shakespeare? We chat to Darren Raymond, Artistic Director of Intermission Theatre, whose own experiences around Shakespeare persuaded him to use the plays in the Intermission Youth Theatre programme to get kids to devise work around both the plays and the issues affecting their own lives. We talked to a group of school kids who came to see Romeo and Juliet at the Globe about what they can and can't relate to in the play. And actor Lewis Bray talks about approaching Shakespeare with dyslexia and how hip-hop helped him to unlock the text. Stick with us to hear how Romeo and Juliet actually all comes back to Love Island.
I don't believe in love at first sight. Nothing. You can't just like see someone fall in love and then marry someone.
But it's interesting. That's an interesting story.
Like Shakespearean, like the text as a whole. Yes. I don't think it's realistic. It's just like...
No, but that's like, I like that one.
First up, Darren Raymond was not a fan of Shakespeare in school, but coming to Othello later in life, he now uses Shakespeare as part of the work he does at Intermission Youth Theatre. Here's Darren.
Can you tell me a little bit about your first experiences with Shakespeare?
So, my first experience with Shakespeare would have been in school. I vaguely remember studying Macbeth, but to be honest with you, I don't remember much about that experience at all, mainly because in education I kind of wasn't really that engaged, and particularly around kind of classical work, because I just didn't feel that it had any significance to my life. So when we were introduced to the text, I probably at that point probably bolted out of school and went somewhere else that was more fun. And then the next time I was introduced to Shakespeare was when I was 21, and this time it kind of connected with me, and that was because of where I was. So I was in a kind of a quite sullen place mentally, and kind of got myself into a downward spiral as a youngster growing up in East London, where there was a lot of kind of negative influences, and it was easy for you to lose your way, which I did. And I suppose at that moment, when the teacher at the time brought Shakespeare into this space, I suppose I was looking for something. I was looking for some kind of escape anyway. So I think I was a bit more open and receptive to different things at that time, subconsciously. And it was Shakespeare's Othello that we were looking at. And for the first time, I was like, oh my gosh, this is quite interesting. And maybe because it was about a black character, which I'd never thought Shakespeare had or even knew about. And as we delved deeper into the work, I understood that it was about a black man who was searching for, or just wanted to be loved, and was an outcast. And at that, you know, that time I felt in a similar place, so it was something I could relate to, so it really connected with me. I definitely felt at that point that I had a story to tell, and if I really think about it, it was Shakespeare that inspired me to tell stories, and it was from that moment that I really kind of fell in love with storytelling.
What was it that you sort of hooked onto?
On reflection, when I asked myself, well, why didn't it connect at school? I believe it's because I didn't have a reason to even engage or give any kind of time to something like that that didn't feel a part of me. This drama teacher, he was very good in terms of making the text meet you halfway. So what I mean by that is that he was very clever, I suppose, in knowing who he was working with, knowing the room. And there was about 15 of us in the room. And, you know, he got to know each of us individually and had this ability to kind of understand maybe a little bit about what we might be going through and what text would be able to respond to that or connect to those feelings, those emotions, and those journeys. For me now, being able to break that down and understand how that helped to connect me to the text, I realised that I'm interested very much in, yeah, his characters, definitely, his themes, absolutely, and his stories and how he tells stories. And I suppose the language, even though it's hard to say it better than Shakespeare, I think it's about breaking down the barrier, which I believe for a lot of people, especially people who don't connect with this work, is the language, and then bringing that in once we kind of find our way into it.
Can I ask a bit about the work that Intermission Youth Theatre does?
Yep. So Intermission Youth Theatre it's a 10-month programme for young people, 16 to 25-year-olds, who come from disadvantaged backgrounds or who are at risk, and ex-offenders we work with, and young aspiring actors as well. And we use Shakespeare in this programme to raise self-esteem, self-awareness, to build confidence. It's not just Shakespeare, it's conversations as well, and a mentoring scheme that we follow in order to just help young people be the best versions of themselves. But because Shakespeare worked for me and really kind of unlocked so many different things in my life, in terms of literature, you know, different class of people is introduced me to, and cultures, and different parts of this country that, you know, I was born in, and learning a bit more about that history and how I fit in, or, you know, how as a person and my heritage fits into this story of Britain. So, because it's so rich in so many different facets, it just felt the obvious thing to do when I set up a youth theatre was to do Shakespeare, because I knew it was possible to get young people to enjoy this work and to feel that they have some ownership over it, because I went through that same experience. And I'm not precious, I spoke about the language earlier, I'm not very precious about the language. Language continuously evolves. If you showed Chaucer a Shakespeare script, he would have probably gone mad at the bastardization of the English language. So I don't know why we have this feeling as a nation that, oh, Shakespeare can't be tampered with, it's one way, and it's, I mean, half of the stuff I'm sure he made up, do you know what I mean? And I always say that art is down to interpretation. So you're going to understand it different to another person, and doesn't mean that your way is wrong and your way the other person's right. So all this analytical garbage around Shakespeare, and it has its place, I'm going to call it garbage because that's, I have my opinion to do that. I just think, you know, if we kind of just push that aside for a moment and get to the essence of what we feel this is for us, then I think, you know, you have a lot more people feeling a part of this culture, which ultimately can enrich your life.
How do you approach the Shakespeare with your kids, like when they first come in?
So I don't mention Shakespeare. We don't use that word because Shakespeare comes with so many different connotations for young people. So, say, his name gets thrown out the window. And, you know, I kind of look at the group that comes in. So we work with approximately 40 young people a year. For the first kind of half an hour before the workshop begins, we sit in like a living room space and we just talk about our lives and what's happening. Talk about current affairs, current issues that are happening. And I just kind of gauge what the, you know, what the feeling is amongst young people, and particularly the group that I'm working with, and then that kind of throws up Shakespeare plays in my head, and I think, oh, they'll be good for this play. This play would really be good for them. And then in the workshop, I'll just start throwing in themes and around those things. So if I think Julius Caesar is a good play, I might just start throwing stuff around knife crime, around ambition and conspiracy or whatever, and just start playing with those themes and creating characters, improvisations, and letting them respond to this work. And then after about 6 weeks, I say to them, guys, listen, I think we should do a play called Julius Caesar. Does anybody know or heard of that play? Some may say, oh, yeah, isn't that Shakespeare? And I say, yeah. And then they say, oh, do we have to do Shakespeare or whatever? And I say, well, you've been doing it for the last 6 weeks. You know, what do you mean? And then, you know, so already they're asking the question. So what do you mean? So that is an invitation to talk about Shakespeare. So then I will talk about Shakespeare's Caesar, you know, in a language that they will understand. I wouldn't just kind of delve straight into the text and go into kind of all history, but I'll just talk about Caesar as being the ultimate knife crime play. You know, it's about this geezer who people think is becoming a bit too ambitious, and they conspire against him and stab him to death. And they will connect with that straight away. I mean, especially now, Caesar's a good play to do because of what's happening in our streets. then they will start asking questions, and then we'll be doing some more work, and they will say, well, what is Shakespeare? What did he do in his play? And I say, well, let's look at it, you know, and then because there's two parallel worlds now, at which the world just goes round and on an axis anyway, and things come back full circle. So they quickly discovered that actually Shakespeare was a genius about writing about human conditions and what we all go through. So that's the way in. And then they just learn to love it. And then they realise they can't say it better than Shakespeare. So we end up putting Shakespeare's text into our play, which we devise over the 10 months, and it's fused with contemporary language. And so you have, you know, Shakespeare sitting alongside modern language, which creates this whole new kind of feeling, a whole new kind of rhythm, a whole new kind of way of communicating. And I think Shakespeare, he would give that the stamp of approval, because I imagine that's what he did with his company of actors, you know, devising, coming up with new stuff, making up new words, which you know he did, you know, playing with language. So to tell young people, which we like to do, actually, the way they speak nowadays is, you know, you shouldn't speak like that, or you can't, don't say that, or, you know, you're dumbing down the English language. You're effectively stifling their creativity. You know, imagine somebody telling Shakespeare when he came up with some of these brilliant words that we use today, oh, what are you doing? Don't speak like that. You can't do that. Don't say that. We wouldn't have this great playwright, which now they all hold on a pedestal. So there's going to be a young person who's changing the way we communicate now. And in 400 years' time, who we're going to be talking in the same breath as we do as Shakespeare. So I think we should allow these, you know, these young people to be creative and to understand and use Shakespeare and own Shakespeare in a way that really resonates with the lives that they're living now.
Why do you think we still attach so many connotations of elitism and that kind of thing to Shakespeare? Why does it feel so difficult, and why do your young kids come in with all this sort of baggage around it?
That's a really tough question. I think Shakespeare has this kind of... I think because Shakespeare pays a lot of people's bills, if I'm going to be completely honest with you, right? There's a lot of kind of organisations, livelihoods are built on this work. And when that happens, unfortunately, we, you know, as human beings, there's this thing that we have which is about kind of ownership, protection, you know, and if we kind of hand it over, then we lose the essence of what it is and perhaps lose our livelihoods. And as people as well, change is something that is hard to kind of deal with. And because it's been like that for a certain period of time, and a lot of years, Shakespeare's been in the hands of the elite, predominantly white, male-dominated. Shakespeare doesn't belong to anybody, but people convince themselves that it does. They've somehow convinced themselves that it's theirs. I've never seen any kind of writing where, or documentation where Shakespeare said, my plays belong to a certain class and type of people. So they need to kind of ask themselves why they believe it's just for them. I mean, I don't have the answer, but it's clearly a piece of literature that is for everybody.
Next up, we sat down with a group of teenagers to talk about Romeo and Juliet. They had recently seen the Playing Shakespeare with Deutsche Bank production of the play here at the Globe. So what are their first impressions of Shakespeare, and can they relate to the themes in the play?
I feel like Shakespeare is so boring.
I don't like reading it. I don't understand it.
Unless it comes to life, when it comes to life.
When it comes to like theatres, it might be better.
Yeah.
It's the language.
It's difficult. If you don't understand it, then yeah. It's boring.
Thou.
Yeah.
Nah.
Nah. Yeah.
Can I put something in? You watched today the director and how he was talking about the time span of it, and I tried to emphasise the fact that it starts on a Sunday night at a party
and finishes on Thursday.
It finishes on Thursday with them being.
That's so quick, like.
It's so quick.
And in that time, they've got married. Do you think you can relate to that?
No. No. Are you crazy? Me marrying someone in those days. That's too quick.
That's 48 too quick.
Hours 4 years.
Yeah. Exactly. And we're dead.
I don't believe in love at first sight. Nothing. You can't just like see someone fall in love and then marry someone.
But it's interesting. That's an interesting story.
Like Shakespearean, like the text as a whole. Yes. I don't think it's realistic. It's just like.
No, but that's like, I like that one.
Okay, so let's now put it in, like, did you watch Love Island last year?
Yeah. No, of course.
Okay, yeah, all right, oh, okay. Yeah. And so are you friends of Danny Diamond?
Oh, yeah.
But they're with each other 24-7, so it's different.
Okay, all right, so being with someone 24-7 is totally different.
No.
Because you connect more, do you know what I mean?
You do connect more.
So you think if Romeo and Juliet being together more...
Yeah, then you met there's so like one encounter or something.
Danny Dyer and
they didn't get married.
They didn't get married. 2 days. That's what it drags. But in those days, marriage was like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because if you marry someone standard. In like 2 days, you might like grow to know their flaws and stuff like that.
But that's interesting. Like that story is interesting. That that's
marriage. Like marriage was something.
It's expected. You're meant to marry young.
But now, like marriage is something more deeper. Like,
yeah, important.
It's like less important for us with that education.
Stories like that make Shakespeare less boring.
More important now than then, definitely.
You think so?
Yeah. Married like 24 years.
Married. That's a stretch.
It takes like a year when you're engaged.
Yeah. But miss, that's what makes Shakespeare interesting. Like stories like that make Shakespeare interesting for me.
Because
like that's like. That's crazy to make anyone think of that.
So do you think if Juliet had the options you've got, education, one of you mentioned, or marriage, what do you think she would have chosen?
Marriage. She sort of chose marriage because of the time she was in, but...
What, during that time?
Yeah. Oh, if she had a choice of leaving the family home, because in those days you couldn't leave the family home unless you were getting married.
Now,
she didn't would you like rather have parents. An arranged marriage, which is
depends, no.
This love at first sight is just saying?
Love at first sight. Oh, that makes sense.
In those conditions, love at first sight.
Yeah.
But that's the only way she could have left the house.
That's I'd rather love someone than have it being arranged.
Yeah, but...
Because you really might not. Because marrying someone for what your parents like.
It's true.
That's good.
2 days. So
yeah.
So when did Love Island, when did they realise that they're in love with that person?
At least 3 weeks.
Three weeks.
Okay, so really, Shakespeare, to do it justice, should have given them at least a 3 week time span.
No, Love Island is a whole different situation.
I was reading this thing and it said if you like someone for over 4 months, that means you love them.
Nah, that can't be true. I mean, 4 months is a long time, though.
It is a long time. How long do you think it will be?
It's not something. It doesn't
to
take
like
time.
Like.
It just happens naturally.
You can't.
To love someone like.
It might happen over like 2 weeks or something.
I don't think they were.
They were in love.
But they died for each other.
Yeah. That's love.
No, but they were young. No, Romeo wasn't.
Actually, nothing could trump love. If they love each other that much, then they could get married.
2 days.
Yeah, that's all right.
Would you say that Romeo might be on our usual word, rebound?
What's rebound?
Oh, yeah, because she used to like...
He used to like... what's her name?
No, Julia used to like that. Oh, yeah.
It was Romeo who used to like Rosaline.
Yeah, and then she just went straight to Juliet. Yeah.
She didn't like him. And he was like heartbroken and stuff like that. Then he saw her and he's like,
But Romeo said that he loved Rosaline. And now he just loved. Yeah.
So thinking of with Love Island and also just Love at First Sight, do you think Shakespeare is relatable and the themes of the play are relatable today? Can you kind of, do you think they're relevant?
Kind of relatable.
A little bit.
Kind of.
It's not relatable, but it makes sense.
Relatable because everything in this generation happens quick.
Oh, it does.
Very quick.
What about the fact they take their lives? Suicide rate in this country
is high.
It's really high.
But I don't think it's relatable when you take your own life for love. Like, I don't think that's relatable. Yeah.
So what do people take their lives for then?
Stress.
Depression.
It could be life. Stress of like
maybe
life.
Family
it
issues.
It could be in like a really bad situation.
Oh, family issues.
It's not then linked to love. Because if you're lonely, then you don't have anyone loving you.
Oh. Stop doing that and making my head hurt because you're confusing me.
At the same time.
Yeah.
It's different.
Because your link is stuff that's not supposed to be linked.
Because Romeo was a bit depressed after Rosaline, declined him.
Yeah,
I know what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
Do you think it was pretty dramatic for Romeo?
Very.
Himself,
yeah.
100%.
Very. 100%.
Over the top.
Because I swear she faked her death for some reason. Yeah. Then he thought she was actually dead. So he killed himself. Then she woke up and saw him and then killed herself. That is so complicated.
That's over the top.
That's what I mean. It's not realistic.
Hashtag OTT. Yeah.
So kind of the last question, but
we've spoken a bit about like how you can think about it with like Love at First Sight, and that's a little bit relatable. Who do you think Shakespeare is aimed at? What kind of people do you think enjoy Shakespeare?
Old people, definitely.
Let's give an age on this. How old?
60, 70.
No, that's a stretch. Oh, that's a stretch. Onwards. 50. 50 not old. 50 not old, but I'm just saying like 50 and over. 50 and over.
55
or over. 54.
53. A lot of people enjoy Shakespeare, you know. It's only our generation. 54, babe.
No, but yeah.
I say 53.
No. 51 onwards.
They have more knowledge. They understand. They understand Shakespearean language, like the language that he used. They understand it. Also, they can relate as well.
It wasn't that long.
Yeah, but they can still relate. They can still like understand the actual language. We don't understand. Yes, they do.
People can understand language. Is that old people then that marry at first sight and then kill each other after 3 years?
No. But they think
some people marry at love.
We have even we haven't fallen in love, so we don't know how it feels like.
Yeah, true.
And but they understand. That. They know about the arranged marriage. We don't do no arranged marriage.
Yeah.
But in those days,
I swear, like some religions still do it.
Yeah.
You know, it's not as common as it was back then.
Yeah.
So they can relate more to why she would force
love.
Yeah.
To get out of this arranged marriage.
Yeah. Wow. Sad.
She could have just fought it.
Definitely. If you knew you were up for an arranged marriage, what would you do to not have this arranged marriage?
Run away.
No, that's a stretch.
I'm not going to marry anyone on the road.
Road. It's gonna have. If I fall in love, then that's. I'm just not having an arranged marriage. That's so unfair.
Yeah, definitely not.
Yeah, but that time.
Empathise with Juliet, her father has set her up for.
Yeah, we can, but we can't relate the way old people can relate.
Not even old people. Yeah, but because we're so young, we haven't fallen in love, so we don't know how love feels.
So people who have fallen in love.
If I'm.
So you never had a boyfriend.
Yeah, but I'm not in love with him. No.
Oh.
Boyfriend's just like, but love is like serious, like deep love. Yeah. And it's when I find that deep love, then I can relate. Yeah.
For eternity, like forever.
If, when you marry someone, you love the person. That's why. If I have experienced love, then I understand where Juliet's coming from when she loves Romeo.
So she's already married to Romeo. There's a wedding for her to marry Paris. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that's a bit complicated. Yeah. She can't marry Paris because she's already married. Who knows? Mm-hmm. What would you have done in her situation then?
I'm telling my family, sorry, but I have a man. I like this boy. I love this boy. You're going to have to leave Paris alone. But they only want me to marry Paris because he's rich.
Yeah.
Of the wealth.
Yeah, wealth.
So you run away together? That's what you mean?
No. But we're not going to kill each other. That's the last result. Like, that's.
We're killing ourselves.
So,
that's crazy.
Did you not think it was a clever plan for her to fake her death so then she doesn't have to marry Paris?
Clever.
It was clever, but.
The thing is, it's wrong place, wrong time.
Who?
Yeah. That's sad.
The letter and the letter just doesn't get there.
Oh.
Man. Yeah. Like,
but didn't he, like.
Yeah, but that's smart. That's what gets people to watch it.
Like, today, you can send a text.
True.
Yeah. And when I got to him.
That's what I mean. All people didn't have phones in those days, so they know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, what's that? You know, when you
get
the blue ticks.
Yeah.
Two ticks.
Romeo didn't do the two blue ticks, then what?
Exactly. Oh. That's what we're trying to say. So they need to get better Wi-Fi, but.
That's what I'm saying. Other than that.
Next, we sat down with Lewis Bray, whose one-man show Discovering Shakespeare draws on his own experiences of delving into the plays. As a dyslexic actor, he approaches the text and the plays from a different perspective and using different techniques. Here's Lewis.
My name is Lewis Bray and I'm an actor. I moved to London about 9 months ago after winning the BBC Norman Beaton Fellowship competition, and I moved here with a month's rent in my back pocket and a hope and a dream.
Can you tell me a bit about your first experiences with Shakespeare?
I've always been around Shakespeare, but when I was younger, I've got dyslexia, and I didn't read a book till I was 21 because I used to be kind of really afraid of it. So Shakespeare was definitely a no-no for me. In school, they used to try and make us stand up and read it in class, and it was kind of not the cool thing to take it seriously. Like, why are you trying? So I kind of just was like, yeah, I like it, but I'm not gonna try with it. That was kind of my first encounter with it. And then I saw a production of The Tempest, and I saw an actor speak it for the first time, and it just was so different and so not what I was trying to stumble through on the page, and loved it.
And what was it that felt inaccessible to you? Was it something in the text, or was it sort of the aura around it?
I think for me, it was what preceded it. It was how it's taught, how it's kind of presented, I think instantly put me off. When in actual fact, as I've got older and I've worked with Shakespeare more, you realise that a lot of the directors and actors that you work with that want to make Shakespeare kind of try and strip all of that away and try and make it as accessible as possible. So that was the exciting thing for me.
How did you come to work with Shakespeare?
I came to work with Shakespeare through hip-hop. I love hip-hop music. I've grown up on it. I just think it's so similar in terms of its storytelling, talking about heightened language, rhythm, rhyming schemes, and things that I struggle with as a dyslexic person. And that's how I learned my Shakespeare, through rapping. I'm not a rapper by any stretch of the mark, but that helps me unlock Shakespeare. Yeah, and for me, like Hamlet, for example, I feel like there are lots of songs and lots of things in sort of modern culture that mirror exactly the same things that were going on in Hamlet's life. For me, that's how I was able to access it.
Are you putting your own rhythms under the words, or putting the words to sort of familiar hip-hop rhythms?
At first, I did, just because I thought that was fun and daft to do. And it would usually unlock a lot more of the meanings of what the actual text meant for me. And that just helped me learn iambic pentameter. It sort of taught me how to do that and how to break that and how to play with that. And that's really what got me excited, because when I was younger, I used to research about lyrics and what did that mean and what does this mean? And it's exactly the same with Shakespeare. Like, you spend time researching the things that you like, and I just started to do that with Shakespeare. What did it mean? And most importantly, what did it mean to me? Because I think that was one of the things that I found really difficult to begin with, was because I didn't know what I would bring to Shakespeare, what were my feelings towards it. But through hip-hop and understanding the storytelling of it, I love it now.
And what were the sort of characters and themes that drew you in and that you felt you could bring yourself to?
I'm a massive fan of comedy, so I obviously love lots of the comic characters, but more recently, Hamlet. I mean, I know that seems like an obvious choice, but if you strip away the fact that he's a prince, to me, he's just a guy who's lost his dad, and he's going through lots of mental health issues, and that's something that I can relate with, and I can, although I've not lost my dad, but I can start to piece together the person and understand a bit more about them without the things that go on top of it to begin with. And that's what excites me, characters like that who really come from a real place. That those are the Shakespeare plays that I enjoy most.
Can you tell me a bit about the one-man play that you've written?
I'm doing a one-man play called Discovering Shakespeare, and it's about a security guard who works in a church, and most nights he's got a few hours to kill, and he decides to start reading the entire works of William Shakespeare, and he wants to explore in his life different pieces of Shakespeare text and what they mean to him, and sort of start to answer the questions of his own life. Where is he going? How does he deal with death? How does he use those pieces to help him educate himself to move forward in life.
And why do you think that there is this sort of aura around Shakespeare that it is inaccessible?
I think it's inaccessible because of the pedagogy that precedes it. And what's important and I think vital to help people get past that is to show them that Shakespeare is for everyone. It is difficult to understand to begin with. I think you do have to take a little bit of extra time, but no more time than you would doing research on a documentary that you like, or watching a few YouTube videos, or just doing that work to help you understand what those plays could mean to you, could really open up a world of fun and excitement. And I think if we are able to strip away all that-ness about it, I think more people would be able to enjoy it and not feel like they can't access it, like they can't, it's not theirs, because it is theirs. It was written for the people.
And you've talked a bit about hip hop as your way of breaking it down.
Yeah.
How do you think we should be breaking that down?
Dyslexics work with images and they're kind of think so differently and outside of the box. And I think to break Shakespeare down, you have to be able to do that with the Shakespeare itself and not come at it from a conventional point of view and be willing to pull it apart in ways that you might not have thought of before. And trying to help people with dyslexia find the meanings of words in different ways, maybe using visuals instead of long explanations and pieces of text, I think helps a person with dyslexia get to somewhere emotionally quicker than having to read books and books and books of research. I think what dyslexia can bring to Shakespeare is that outside the box thinking, is that, I mean, like I said, I've accessed Shakespeare through hip hop, so I've accessed it from different rhythms and different kind of feelings. I think the best way for dyslexics to access Shakespeare is to play with it in a non-conventional way. And it's important in the rehearsal room, in performance, that people are open to seeing it in new ways and accessing it through different means, whether that's through hip-hop, whether it's through whatever it is that helps you get into that, to be able to open up that first conversation. Because actually, I don't think it's about getting everyone on the same page. I think it's about accepting what people can all bring to the table creatively. I think dyslexic people are very good at recognising patterns and rhythms. For me, breaking down Shakespeare is about always coming back to the human, always making the story relatable, always, especially for young kids, to have them recognise and understand emotions in the characters that they can see in themselves. That's number one for me. It's what it means to young people. That it's not about the reputation it has. It's more about what can you bring to it. That's what I'm trying to say with the dyslexia. With dyslexia, you have a lot of empathy, and to push that, to be able to empathise with these characters, I think opens that want to be able to play.
That's it from us, but we'll be back soon with stories from the summer season here at Shakespeare's Globe as we return to the Globe Theatre and hopefully some sunshine. Darren will be directing the Shakespeare Walks. To celebrate Shakespeare's birthday, the Shakespeare Walks take you on a two-hour walk through Shakespeare's London with 22 actors. Originally conceived by Mark Rylance, who will be part of the company, they have taken place annually for over 25 years.
The two walks begin in Westminster and in Shoreditch, and both finish up here at the Globe. They run on Saturday the 20th and Sunday the 21st of April, and for more information and tickets, please see our website. Our Globe Education team works with students every day to help unlock Shakespeare's themes, characters and stories, and to strip away some of the preconceptions we've been talking about. To find out more about the work we do with primary and secondary school children, international schools and higher education students, check out our website. You've been listening to Such Stuff with me, Imogen Greenberg. To find out more about Shakespeare's Globe and what's on, follow us on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram. We'll be back with more stories from Shakespeare's Globe, so subscribe wherever you got this podcast from. Thank you.